Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Part two at our look of what needs to be changed around the Kansas City area with Dr. Jeremy Neely continues. He's a professor of history at Missouri State. Myself and Diane Houston asked Jeremy what's next when it comes to renaming things in Kansas City.
Well, the last time we kind of all got together, we talked about the Confederate statues and what's going on in our country with the taking down of Confederate statues. And it's not just the removal of statues. It's now become the renaming of stuff. And yikes. Dr. Jeremy Neely, the professor of history at Missouri State, Diane Houston, local Kansas City and historian. And we're all talking about what needs to be renamed in Kansas City. And guys, and Dr. Neely, I'll start with you on this. Isn't it easier to talk about stuff that doesn't need to be renamed in Kansas City than stuff that does need to be renamed in Kansas City?
As we talked about before, there are so many people in the past that are problematic that we could find reasons to take their name off of something. It's a process that once you begin, you can begin to wonder, well, gosh, where do we stop? Is this the slippery slope in which we just rename everything? And I don't think it has to become that, because I think there are still some people we can find that are worth keeping those names on there. But you're right, we're having ourselves a moment where everything seems to be up in the air.
Yeah, it really is. And basic stuff, too. Like, who would have thought Johnson, Jackson, you know, are names that have to be looked at and considered when it comes to renaming things? Because I think if you ask the average citizen who Jackson County, Missouri is named after, they don't know. It's a common name, right? Johnson County, Missouri. Could there anything be more bland and more Kansas than the name Johnson and fit into days,
yes,
you know, with Johnson County? I mean, as bland as it gets. And so yeah, you probably just think it's a very bland name, and both of them are very bland names, but they really do hold historical significance. And if we're looking at what's going on in the country right now, we probably have to consider renaming both of those counties.
I hope the pro of pissing people off in Kansas City of renaming things or stopping things from being renamed. But, you know, I bring up Paseo because it's obviously current that this is still going on. And, you know, Paseo is a unique thing because it's uniquely Kansas City is what is, of course, and then also the way it was done. You can't just take stuff down without talking to the people like that are directly affected. And I think that is a big, again, you have to have dialogue with people before you just start taking stuff down. And with Paseo, it wasn't about Martin Luther King, although nationally they made it that way, but it wasn't about Martin Luther King. It was about the Kansas City's conceptualized in our history with, you know, our first grandest and most beautiful boulevard in Kansas City. So I think that when you're looking at things like Jackson County and Johnson County, and there's history there, and most people think they understand and they don't. You know, grew up in the area and I didn't know that much about, and I never learned about Thomas Johnson in history class, you know? So I think, yeah, was he a slave? No. And Thomas Johnson, of course, for those who may not know, was a reverend who started the Shawnee Indian Mission and essentially, you know, kind of ripped them off. I'm not going to lie about that. And then also he was a prior slave owner. He brought slaves into Kansas, when Kansas was still a territory. You know, and it's like I say, it's part of the history. And in the end, I should say, he also did side with the union. But he has a really, you know, a dicey history. But what figure in the 19th century that has a name didn't have a controversial, you know, piece in American history, especially in Kansas City? This is like the hotbed. This is like that you got your people from Tennessee, Virginia, and Kentucky on the Kansas or the Missouri side. And on the Kansas side, you've got like the New Immigrant Aid Society. It couldn't be like a worse balance of power. All right here. And of course they're going to name things after the, you know, common people that were important of the day. And they're still important today. I don't know. I think it's dicey.
I'm not going to try to dodge this question, but what I'll add is the historical context that these names were disputed back when they were first bought, many of them. And we have come to take these names as, set in stone because they've been attached to these places for such a long time. Right. But once upon a time in the 1850s and before in Missouri, there was a lot of give and take, and there were names that got changed because, for example, Cass County, Missouri, just south there of the Triangle. Once upon a time, Cass County was Van Buren County, named after former President Martin Van Buren. And in the 1840s, Van Buren was running for president again. But this time on behalf of a new outfit, a third party that called itself the Free Soil Party. And Martin Van Buren's politics had changed, and he had come out against the expansion of slavery into the West. And when the folks in Van Buren County, Missouri, learned about this, they weren't pleased. And so they decided to take his name off of their county and to give it to the other guy who was running on behalf of the Democratic Party, Lewis Cass from Michigan. To reflect their values. You have county names in Kansas that get switched. Lycoms County becomes Miami County.
Yep.
And it's been something that has been in the news at several points during our time. And I think that your point about process is well made, that it's something that requires good faith negotiation by an entire community. It can't be the kind of top-down thing that people impose that doesn't reflect what the larger community wants.
So if we're making, you know, a David Letterman style top 10 list of, you know, names that are really like insensitive, bad, not good here in Kansas City, where are we starting? Who's number 10 and who is number one ultimately on that list?
Oh my God.
I'm going to give this to Diane first.
Oh, damn it. Okay. Are you talking about like just in general, like names?
Well, I'm talking in general because I'm talking about let's educate each other on this.
Okay.
Because, I mean, some of the stuff like Higginsville, Harrisonville, you know, Jackson, Johnson County, Johnson Drive, obviously, you know, things of that nature, the J.C. Nichols Fountain, as we've been kind of talking about in Kansas City over and over again. So there seemingly is and are a lot of streets, towns, areas, cities, counties that are named for people that in 2020, quite honestly, are socially unacceptable now compared to where they were maybe in 1820 or 1920 or, you know, sometime in between.
Well, it depends on what side, you know, right now the hotbed, of course, is the BLM movement. So if you're looking at former slave owners, I mean, like, oh God, the list. So, I mean, in this area, the people who got streets named after them were the prominent people of society. They weren't the hill folk that just moved in that couldn't afford to buy a piece of land. These are the people that came with slaves. So you're going to have a lot of people with slaves in Jackson County. It was the hotbed of, on the western side of the western border, it was the hotbed of activity. I would say if you kind of broaden your spectrum a little bit, I think, there's Clay County, named for Henry Clay, owned over 50 slaves, I believe. Jackson County, obviously Jackson's name is attached to somebody with both. I mean, he couldn't have more against him. He's got the Native American removal. He has, he's got slavery attached to him. I would even maybe even argue a little bit about Johnson on the Kansas side. And I don't mean like, see, that's where I get, I struggle because I understand why they were so important and why they need to, some in some ways be revered. He's on the list, though. I'm going to say he's on the list. Streetwise, we got, I mean, where do you want to start? Like, I Kansas City has a very, and as Jeremy brought up, we did rename streets. There used to be a Marianne Street. It was renamed in, I think, after she died. And, of course, they took the woman street. I'm just saying, you know. I mean, they don't take the
who's Marianne? Who's Marianne?
Marianne was Marianne, well, she was the niece of William Gillis, and she was the wife, she was married prior, but the wife of Benoit Troost, who was the first resident physician of Kansas City, Missouri. Mm-hmm. And of course, Troost owned slaves. I'm not going to, when people talk about renaming MLK, you know, from MLK to rename Troost Avenue, yes, he owned a lot of slaves. And Troost became a dividing line between black and white, rich and poor, and gets targeted a lot. And we're doing a pretty good job trying to take that, try to build that community back up again, because it was such a division in mm-hmm. Kansas City. It has nothing to do with Troost. It just happened to fall on Troost. That's the school board's fault, by the way. It's a whole different story. So when you, like, Troost was a slave owner, McGee was a slave owner. Mary Ann lost her street, but her husband, obviously his surname is on a street. You have Charlotte Street. She survived. She was married to Campbell Street, all these names that we see in Kansas City that are highly recognizable. And I'm going to even go back further, because I like to pick on St. Louis.
Yes.
We have a history that is, as we've talked about, has stemmed from the growth of St. Louis and the fur trading, right? And so on this side, we inherit some of these people that come over, the French Canadian fur trappers and traders end up in Kansas City. And, you know, we got the Choteaus. Mm-hmm. And God, right now we have Choteau Traffic Way, and St. Louis has got a lot of renaming to do too, if we're going there.
Right.
Because Choteau Traffic Way, and he was the founder, he's the father of Kansas City, if you will. I mean, did they have slaves? Yes. But did he also come to the wilderness and establish a trading post that grew into Kansas City? Yes. You know? So I don't know. I mean, I'm just listing off things off the top of my head. I mean, we could be picking. I have a feeling, and I said this to you guys before, kind of as a side note, I have a feeling the Chiefs are going to get picked on soon. I mean, we could even go current day, because, right. I mean, where we've got a problem and a struggle, and because of our history between Native Americans and enslavement in general, that we have yet to really grapple with. So I don't know. Jeremy, what do you think?
What do you think about that? And if it goes bigger statewide, I'd love to know statewide what potentially needs to be and should be considered, you know, having a rename, because
I didn't say it should be considered, by the way. I said, you asked me for what was controversial. I didn't say that I was like, that's my list. Trust me, that's not my list.
it's a big question. And I'll confess, very good at being able to give you a ranking, although I do like lists and this sort of thing.
Sure.
But I, and there are all kinds of places that I think are worth considering, because we, in many points, not been shy about deciding that here's a person, local son or daughter done good, that we believe they should have their name on something, whether it's Harry Truman or Bruce R. Watkins or whomever. But I think one factor that we haven't considered about in making the decision of these people to stay or go is, do these people change during their lifetimes? Because we can hopefully see within our own lives the potential for people to correct mistakes that they've made, and that people can evolve over time. And in the case of Henry Clay, he owned slaves. And so there's ample evidence to say that, you know, he's not worthy of veneration. But Clay also began to recognize that slavery was incompatible with these Jeffersonian ideals of equality and everything, and that slavery had no business spreading into the West. I'm thinking right now about another one of Kansas City's so-called fathers, of Robert Van Horn.
Yeah.
Who, you know, he had his name on a couple of things once upon a time, but it's sort of receded into memory. Yeah, he had a school.
That's like...
And it's fascinating to me, because he's one of the research projects I'm working on right now, and he was a big deal. He was the guy who got the bridge over the Missouri River. He's the one who helped to bring these railroads to town. But his star waned. But on one hand, Robert Van Horn, good guy. He was instrumental in helping Kansas City grow and to become this metropolis. And he was good because he fought on behalf of the United States. He saw that slavery was wrong. He wasn't a very active abolitionist. And so lots of good stuff. At that same time, however, Robert Van Horn made no apology for thinking that Native Americans should continue to be pushed out farther and farther west. And so he's one of these agents of further dispossession of all these tribes that had been squeezed into Kansas. And so another figure who's complicated. And I think that we have to be willing to have these discussions one at a time, is my thought.
Where do you, Jeremy, rank, like you mentioned people change and they correct their mistakes. So when you're using that kind of description, who are you talking about that maybe we're looking at that was like once a slave owner or was awful to Native Americans and then went, oh, wait a second here, I was wrong about that? Because I think throughout all our lives, we've all, you know, changed our thinking on whatever the topic of conversation is, whether it's sports related, whether it's history related. I think we all grow and mature. Who are some of those folks that you have some stuff named for them that you look at and you go, man, they were awful creatures, but then they realized their ills and transformed themselves and became better?
There are several names that we could think of. Famous names associated with Missouri that people would recognize. Ulysses Grant, you know, who's got some stuff over in St. Louis named for him. He had married into a family that owned slaves. And so you could look back and find one data point that says, aha, Ulysses Grant once upon a time had been part of a slave-owning family. Well, yes, they eventually manumitted and freed that enslaved person. And then Grant goes on to fight for the United States and to win the Civil War, the most important general, arguably, and then becomes president of the United States, who signs into law these path-breaking civil rights bills.
Absolutely.
And so I think Grant's political evolution tells us how people can grow. Abraham Lincoln had not been an abolitionist. He was somebody who was sort of squishy and uncomfortable in talking about racial equality. But then during the war, he's pushed by Frederick Douglass and by other people that he needs to be more proactive. And, you know, not kicking and screaming, but he kind of drags his feet. He becomes the great emancipator. And so those two, I think, are prominent examples. And Harry Truman. Harry Truman, growing up in Jackson County, had lived in a place that I think we can all agree was pretty racist. It's Harry Truman, however, who is the president who takes the bold step to desegregate the U.S. Army. It's Harry Truman who insists that the Democratic Party needs to clean up its act on civil rights. And so I think we can look around and find lots of examples.
I think that what you brought up about Harry Truman, I've seen him a little bit, picked on. And here in Kansas City, we've got lots named after him. So that, you know, obviously a target there. But, you know, they bring up some letters he wrote and where he uses the N-word. Sure. And I'm gonna take this one. I'm going to take one for the team on this because, I mean, nobody wants to talk about a racist relative. Okay, but my great grandma, who grew up in Kansas City and was pretty well-to-do family, we have her diaries from 1917 and 1918, and I inherited them. And reading them, I mean, first of all, she's like a teenager, so they're real. It's just like you would expect. Like she has a crush on everybody. Everybody, you know, I mean, it's typical teenager, but. In it, in one part of it, one sentence that she talks, I'm not even going to explain exactly what it was, but she overfilled the gas tank on a car. And you can imagine this is 1917, 1918. And they find an African-American man who, like, I guess he must have sucked the gas back out of it and those aren't the words that she used. I'm just going to say it that way. My great grandma was, I would say pretty, and I remember her a little bit, was, I wouldn't consider her racist, but the language that she used in there is not okay. Is it a product of the time? And I mean, and especially in this area, probably. But so I see people targeting, and I bring up that story about my own family because I see people targeting Truman on a couple letters. we're all faults. We all have faults. We're all human. And I'm not saying it's okay that he said those things, but as you said, Jeremy, I think we have to look at things from a broader perspective of what good did those people do in their lifetime? Because I sure don't want anybody judging me from my teenagers. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not pretty. So, I mean, you know, you want to make sure that people are given a fair shot. And we leave things out of the history books for a lot of different reasons. So I think that you're right about that. There is a movement. Bob sent me this. I use choice words. I was like, you got to be kidding me. And it was about renaming St. Louis. Bob loves the idea, right, Bob?
I think it's great. I think anything
you're crazy. You know,
I think anything that we can do to change St. Louis is for the better, because living there for 3 years, I mean, you do realize that there is, you know, a big difference between there and Kansas City, and changing the name of St. Louis, if it represents somebody that is an unacceptable human being, then we should maybe look into changing that culture. And
you're insane.
You know,
here's what I got to say about this. You talk about somebody, you had a bunch of French Canadians moving into the St. Louis area. Mm-hmm. And they get a land grant from the French and end up settling in the area in 1764 and established that fur trading post. And they named them after a canonized St. Louis, as in Louis the, I think it's the ninth. The guy, he fought in the Crusades. Like, he was like a national hero in France, right? Crusades, guys, I went to Sion, Notre Dame de Sion. Our mascot when I was at Sion was the Crusaders. It is not the Crusaders anymore. It's the Sion Storm. They changed their name because Crusaders, I mean, they killed people of other religions. They were fighting for Christianity, for Catholicism. Is that a time period thing? Was Louis the Ninth against other religions? Yes. Did he kill Muslims? And was he against, you know, the Jewish or the faith? Yes. Product of his time, we're talking about in the Crusades. And he was a national hero. He's the only canonized, I think he's the only canonized king, if I remember correctly. But St. Louis, and no way. I'm sorry. That's one I just got to go. And I know Bob and I like to, we like to grapple with St. Louis, Kansas City thing all the time. But that's far. That's real far. I mean, if we go that far, then we have a lot of other cities we'd have to rename too. That's all I'm saying. I don't know. It's you know, it's an interesting time period we live in. I'll say that.
Yeah, Jeremy, where do you stand on that?
Oh, I'd like for them to just start with the pizza and fix that.
Yeah, I would too. Their pizza sucks. Yeah.
Gross.
You know what? I'm gonna beg out of this one. Yeah, we could find reason to go back for whether it's St. Louis or the Duke of York, for whom New York was named, and lots of people. William Penn, a good guy in many ways, namesake and proprietor of Pennsylvania. There are people for whom I think the answer is easier. I'm not troubled by the recent turn against Christopher Columbus. The fact that he's having a historical reckoning right now is not something that upsets me. But I think that for some of these people, it's a more difficult conversation. I will chime in, sorry, on Diane's point about the high school mascot. I graduated from a high school that has a problematic Native American mascot that I will come out publicly right now and say it's time to ditch that. But I fear this rural high school, I'm probably in the small minority there.
What high school is that?
Adrian High School.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah,
sure. Just down the highway.
Yep. Yeah, no doubt about it. So I think, though, if Jeremy, you're the professor on all this and have studied this more so than me. Maybe even more than Diane. I don't know. You guys
definitely more than me. I'm an imposter.
Yeah, she's taught me so much about Kansas City history. I defer to her.
No doubt. But if you're making And not just for Kansas City or Missouri or St. Louis or wherever, but if you're making like a list of qualifications that we need to look at when we're considering these name changes, what would be on your list if they say, Dr. Neely, professor of history at Missouri State, you have the grant or whatever you want to call it to come up with the guidelines that we as a nation are going to follow when it comes to renaming and changing names of things? What would you have in kind of that binder, that three-ring binder, to tell people what we need to be looking for and how when we go about name changes?
I think more important than, I mean, this is an awesome power that, you know, it's tempting to sort of seize that and go. But I think what I would favor more than particular values to identifying people is that it should be a decision left to the people.
Thank you.
I think the whole Republican experiment rests upon this idea that the people have the ability to decide for themselves. And the naming of things is, it may seem small, it may just seem symbolic, but I think it's reflective. I could throw in my own two cents of, did these people live in such a way that they reflect American values? And gosh, that's an open-ended thing, but values of equality, of hard work, of generosity. There are lots of values and virtues worthy of recognition, but I think it's in the eye of the beholder, and the eyes of the beholder are constantly evolving. And I think that we should be willing to allow our names to reflect that.
Do you think we're headed towards a society where we have basically New York City, the corner of 1st and 1st, you know, 8th and 47th? I mean, is that where we are headed? Or do you think we will get to a point or maybe we're at a point where people will start to realize that, you know, not all these people were bad 100% of the time, and there were some good things that were done that we should still be able to recognize? Or do you think that we're headed towards a numerical kind of grid system for everybody in America now?
No, I don't think we're going to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I don't expect that we'll see new names on everything, first of all, because
it's expensive to rename. It's
as you well know, it's expensive. Yes. I think that we're going to continue, especially in the near term, have these sharp debates about keeping some of these problematic names. Some of them will go, I suggest with reason, but I think a lot of them are going to stay. And
yeah,
I've got confidence in the people that they can figure this out, hopefully.
Yeah, I like the conversation. I especially like that at least during this movement recently, we've been in the... it's not just about African American history being ignored. It's also about Native American history being ignored. And that's mm-hmm. something in this day and age, and where we are here in Kansas City, especially have to look at. I mean, like I said, Platte County, Platte Purchase, still, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. that is all linked to the Native Americans. And I've seen even people, I think we, you know, have to not ignore the idea that there's a call to rename the Cleveland Indians, and there's a call mm-hmm. to, you know, the Redskins. And then people say, people are like, hey, Diane, why hasn't anybody targeted the Chiefs lately? I'm like, well, they're always being targeted, right? Mm-hmm. However, the Chiefs, you know, Arrowhead, of course, the Chiefs aren't named after a tribe or a piece. They're named after H. Roll Bartle, who is known as the Chief. And of course, mm-hmm. it was the prior mayor of Kansas City. He was the one who helped get the team here. Like, right. Come on, let's get a team here. We're going to steal something from Texas because Texas doesn't need any. They concede. Just kidding. But but when you look at the way that the Chiefs were named, there's an argument there. And I know that just wait for it if it hasn't already happened and it isn't already in the works, that I'm, you know, I think that might be the next real big renaming that happens in this town, at least. And I don't mean I mean the conversation, not the actual doing of. I don't think it'll be well supported, though. That's my opinion.
No, I think that's a conversation that's likely to happen. I believe it's one that could happen. I know that those who are frustrated by the name also point back to the connection that Mayor Bartle had to the scout camp, the Boy Scout camp down at the Mikisay, and the ways in which that camp and others sort of appropriated Native culture in a way that maybe wasn't quite as... they didn't honor Native culture in the way that maybe it intended to. I think that more likely, before they consider the name change, we'll see discussions about whether the team should continue to encourage the CHOP and those sorts of behaviors.
We don't need the drums to keep doing the chop. So you got to convince 60,000 people.
Well, that's
stop
it.
Chopping.
Yeah, that's.
I don't know how that.
And even if the team doesn't, you know, condone it, does that then stop? And I think that's a whole other question.
Well, and I think when the chop starts, I mean, it starts because they're playing the music to lead the fans into the chop. And so if they just stop playing that music, maybe that just is the cue to get everybody, you know, kind of in that mindset to do the chop. If they just stop the music, then maybe the chop stops as well.
The chop stops. I have friends, my friend, dear friend Kristen Blunt, who, you know, I've been to Chiefs games with her, and she won't do the chop. I get in the moment. I do the chop, you know? And it's
hard not to. I mean, you're caught up in it, you know? It's just,
it sounds cool and all of that. And you have people, and I want to say this, you have people from Native American on both sides of this issue, too. They're fans of the Chiefs, and they don't want to see anything change. And then you have the others are like, you got to change this. I'm offended. And we're in a very offensive culture because, you know, and I don't want to say, you know, we have the, you know, the whole idea of the Karens of the world or whatever that are going to complain and do. I don't know if this is necessarily an issue of whether you're complaining or not. It's being proactive and having these types of discussions that you know, acknowledge that even though you have two historians and a sports guy, we might not all agree on what would happen. So what's a compromise? And that's what history is kind of about, is finding that balance and that compromise.
As you can see, there are still a lot of questions and not a lot of answers, but hopefully sooner rather than later, we get answers to all of our questions. I hope you enjoyed our two-part conversation with Dr. Jeremy Neely, the professor of history at Missouri State University.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.